passive listening to a television does not build language. So it's not just hearing language. It has to be this serve and return. And that's a term that has been used in Harvard University, this serve and return, where you ask something, you want an answer back. You try to extend language. So if a child gives you a one-word answer, you take that word and you try to extend it, possibly with some adjectives.
Hey, Joyful Warriors. Tiffany Justice here with the Joyful Warrior podcast. Moms for Liberty, we're doing lots of great things across the country, talking about a lot of different issues that are impacting you and your families. And I know one of the pressing issues that many of you are concerned about right now in America is the fact that our kids are not learning how to read in school. They might be able to read the back of a cereal box, but can they pick up a chapter book and read it? You know, is your child doing as well in school as that report card says, and how do you know? And so because reading is so incredibly important, we know that if kids don't learn to read by third grade, their chances of having adverse experiences with law enforcement go up, their chances of dropping out of high school go up, and we shouldn't be limiting kids' potential in elementary school, for heaven's sakes. Every child deserves to learn to read. I have a very special guest with me today. So Faith Borkowski has joined us, a fellow Joyful Warrior. She is the founder of High Five Literacy and is an internationally respected and sought-after literacy consultant, certified dyslexia practitioner, and award-winning author and speaker. She is the author of the award-winning book, Failing Students or Failing Schools, and a parent's Guide to Reading Instruction and Intervention, and the book, If Only I Would Have Known. And I know a lot of you moms feel that way. If only you had known that your child was struggling, or if there was a way that you could have helped them, you would have done that. And so just so excited to have Faith join us today to talk a little bit about the books that she's written. And If Only You Would Have Known, it's a series of these books, you said, Faith, are conceived as a roadmap for literacy readiness and success for parents of young children. You were also the finalist for the World Literacy Foundation Award for your contributions to literacy. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Faith, the kids are not okay. And part of the question when we look at why are the kids not doing well in America right now, they seem to not be getting practicable skills in school. So there are still expectations of them. But I try to think about if I'm a kid and I'm being expected to do a lot of different things in school and I can't do them, I would imagine there's a lot of shame and embarrassment that happens for that child. And so we want to talk to you today because our moms are passionate about their kids learning how to read, and they're passionate about every child learning how to read. So give us a little state of the union, Faith, to kids and reading. Welcome to the Joyful Warrior podcast.
Thank you, Tiffany. I'm so happy to be here with you today. So I've been at this for a long time. I went into teaching in 1986, and when I graduated, there was a movement called Whole Language. And whatever was already in the schools already, whatever phonics instruction they had, was being taken out. And this movement of Whole Language morphed into what we know now as balanced literacy. And the idea is that if kids are exposed to wonderful books and they're read to and they have books in the home and in school, that they will just pick it up. They will learn to read. So what science is telling us is, no, that's really not how kids learn to read. Some seem like they just pick it up, but they have the ability to basically intuitively figure out the alphabetic code. But most children need direct, explicit instruction in learning how to read. And that's what this movement called the Science of Reading has been about for now a number of years. The issue is that anytime there is a movement, sometimes things morph into something that is unintended, unexpected. But if you look how history repeats itself, honestly, we could expect this to happen because, publishers want to sell books and, you know, it's big business. And, you know, because of that, they look to see where the business is. So if this is the next big thing, they are going to just jump on that. And that's what keeps them afloat. But as smart consumers, we have to realize this. And parents are trusting and they're sending their kids to school, rightfully so, expecting them to learn how to read. And often this doesn't happen the way they think it will happen. And unfortunately, it starts very early. It starts in kindergarten, where kids are coming home anxious, sometimes not wanting to go to school. And then it goes into first grade. And then sometimes parents are told, well, just wait and see. Just wait and see. Give them time. Well, unfortunately, that's not what should happen.
Okay.
In K to 2, kids should be getting direct, explicit instruction in being, you know, taught how to read, understanding how words work, understanding that there is a code that needs to be broken. And this is where a lot of time should be spent in those early years, learning how the alphabetic code works, making sure they can write letters fluently, automatically. That's a big part of this. Handwriting has been pushed aside as far as the time goes. So all of this needs practice. And the school day is filled with a lot of things, and sometimes those practice opportunities are not there.
So Faith, you have a finite amount of time with kids during the school day. What percentage of a child's education in grades K, 1, 2, 3 should be spent on reading fluency?
Okay. So in K to 2, a lot of time needs to be spent on understanding how letters and sounds connect and being able to push those sounds together to fluently read. And that means automatic recognition of a word, not memorizing sight words, but actually making that connection between the sounds that we speak and the letters that represent those sounds, and understanding that when kids see a word, that words become sight words with lots and lots of practice of gluing letters and sounds together. And so this takes time and kids are different, but there's certainly not enough time being spent on practice, on application. And it's being crowded by a very full day. Often the curriculum that teachers are given is filled with a lot of different things that are truly impossible for them to cover everything. And so they are left having to pick and choose, and often things that are very important in K to 2 are left out and or not given enough attention. By the time they finish second grade, they should be able to read. Most kids can be taught. And that is not my opinion. That is research. That, you know, 95% or better. We should have a very small number of children in intervention. That's not how it is in this country. We have many more kids in intervention than should be there.
So let's talk about that. So you're talking about a lot of things, and this is one of the first podcast that I've done really focused on literacy. And I often, even as a mom, and then even as a school board member, found that there was a lot of fuzzy language around this, or a lot of terminology that parents may not understand, right? Mm-hmm. So you talked about the fact that balanced literacy has been used for a very long time. I'd love if you could just go through and talk about balanced literacy, three cueing, some of the things, like how would you know how your child is being taught to read versus for balanced literacy, or, you you know, you said direct explicit instruction. I know that there's this term, science of reading, a very fuzzy term, right? And I see curriculum manufacturers kind of grabbing onto that now and trying to, right? And so that money machine that you were talking about at the beginning is something we need to be aware of. So the biggest thing I think that's really important right now is moms need to know, when my child goes to school or in my child's school, how are they teaching my child to read, and is it an effective method?
Yes. So that's actually why I wrote this If Only I Would Have Known series of books. It's because after parents would see what I would do with their kids, after an assessment, after they understood what should happen, they, you know, it was like, oh, if I had known. But I actually used their words, and the book title is in quotes, because that's really what my parents would say to me, all the parents that would come to me. And there would be a lot of crying and feelings of guilt that they wish they could go back in time, but you don't get a do-over. So the books are meant to really show parents what that should look like. So let me explain. In balanced literacy, what happens is kids are given often leveled books. So there's this gradient system from A to Z. The early books, A, B, C, D in particular, have a lot of predictable, repetitive words. I see, you know, I see mom, I see dad, I see a beach ball, I see a table, I see, I see, I see. So if that's how they're building that sight vocabulary, now how are they reading the other words on the page? They are looking at pictures, you know, seeing the first letter and making a guess. Because if those same words were taken off the page where the pictures are, they wouldn't be able to read it in kindergarten, at least most. You know, there are some
kids. If the pictures were taken off and the words were there.
Yes. You know, either way, if the words are isolated without pictures,
got it,
they are not going to be able to read without the cues that they're getting.
Okay.
That's the cueing system. Without being able to jump around the page, look at the pictures, kind of feel the meaning of what's going on, and then make a guess based on the first letter.
Okay.
And what happens is this is habit forming. So even if a child didn't have language issues, any speech and language delays, we are teaching kids, if we use that method, to, we're teaching them to guess. And
makes it really hard if there aren't any pictures in the book once it's only words, right?
And that's going to happen, right? There are, they're not going to read picture books forever. So this idea of using the page where, you know, you read for meaning. Well, of course we read for meaning. That's what reading is. But they should not learn how to read words based on just kind of figuring out the meaning of a predictable story. So a lot of kids get stuck after level D. Sometimes they could get to level E or F with a push, but it's very hard to get beyond that unless you really know how the code works. So that's what's problematic about this balanced literacy, the idea that kids could use other things besides reading the words on the page.
Okay, so for a mom that's listening right now and they're like, gosh, this sounds maybe what like what's happening with my kids. Give us some things, give us some like, you know, red flags that, you know this is happening if this is what the homework looks like, this is what the classwork looks, you know, some, a little bit of that.
Sure. So a red flag is if a list of 20 sight words go home in the book bag and the teacher is basically handing over that to the parent to say, okay, study these words this week. These are the words that they need. And that's not how reading should be taught. And it basically hands over the responsibility of instruction to parents to just drill these kids on sight words. That's a red flag right there. If the books that they are using all have predictable, repetitive language in it, red flag, because the kids will appear like they are reading. They get into this Sometimes they read it a few times in school, and then they're bringing these books home to read to their parents. And what happens is they just memorize this. And parents are thinking, oh, well, this must be how kids learn to read. If they read this enough times, they'll just get it. And like I said, some kids do, but often that's not the case. And so we have kids who have truly, you know, learning issues, but then we have these manufactured learning problems, you know, that teachers unknowingly are causing kids to read ineffectively. And it's not that it's the teacher's fault. This is what was taught to them. It was taught to me. You know, and when I first started, I really thought this is how kids learn to read. Just provide them with just wonderful books and just fill the classroom with books and they will just learn to read. Well, I had an elementary education degree. I had a special education degree. I went for a master's in reading, hoping that would help me, but it was really more of the same type of theories. And only after I was teaching 15 years did I discover on my own what reading should look like through a book and through my own searching. And then I had to retrain myself at my own expense. And this is on top of paying for, you know, college, graduate school. It's really unfair.
So let's talk about that for a second. So Columbia University's Teacher College I'm reading a news report shuttering its once famous, in some circles now infamous, reading organization founded by education guru and entrepreneur Lucy Calkins. The title of the article is "The Decades-Long Travesty That Made Millions of Americans Mistrust Their Kids' Schools." So while we see the role of public education expanding, which it has, you know, if you look 50 years ago what schools were required to teach versus now, teachers have a lot more stuff that they're supposed to cover than they used to be required to cover. But then you also have this mess that you're talking about, this fact that there were very well-intentioned people, women like you, men like you, who love kids, who genuinely wanted to be a teacher, who went to teachers college and were, it blows my mind. They were taught, you were taught how to do your job in a completely ineffectual manner. I mean, what a betrayal of the trust of the students. And then, you know, the kids of America.
Yes. So look, what bothers me is I understand if at the time we weren't really looking at the science. We didn't have the same data at the time to really show that there is a better way. But once people knew, this is what bothered me. Once people knew, many people still rejected it. Mm. And, you know, Columbia University was led by, you know, the Reading and Writing Project. That was a cash cow for them, honestly. And so they weren't so ready to get rid of something that brought in a lot of money to the university.
Sure.
You can't tell me that universities did not know if other people were able to find out this evidence existed. Certainly, universities had to know. And they were still pushing these theories. And teachers were taking it in, going to school, paying good money to get degrees. And you can't tell me that this was hidden. It wasn't. I was part of Reading First. And that was with the No Child Left Behind Act. And so this information now has been out there for over 20-something years, you know, so probably it started in the late 90s.
So, you know, at least for 20 years, the Columbia University Teachers College has been teaching teachers how to teach children to read incorrectly and have basically gotten away. I mean, it's pretty mind-blowing to me. If I was a teacher who had gone through that program, I would imagine I would be very upset. I mean, and it's really...
It's a travesty.
It really is a travesty.
Yeah.
So what is...
Yeah, but it's not just Columbia.
I understand.
So, but they are, you know, the epicenter of a lot of this.
Sure.
And then, you know, there's Ohio State University with some other powerful people, Fontas and Pinnell, and their level literacy.
Curriculum manufacturer, parents. We're talking about curriculum manufacturers now. There's a lot of money to be made in curriculum and education technology. Continues, you know, right now it's a lot of money to be made.
Yes, yes. So again, we're taking something that has good intentions, looking at science, trying to follow what the evidence tells us. But now it looks like there are people who just want to slap an SOR, science of reading, label on just about anything. And what I see happening in districts is they come up with a comprehensive literacy plan. And what this is, it's taking certain things, the sound bites, the slogans of what evidence shows us, but at the same time, still holding on to some other things that don't work. So rather than getting rid of that and then embracing something else, they try to balance it once again, only not using the word balance. They could use comprehensive. You know, there are all sorts of words to kind of mask what could be a problem. And that's why parents have to be knowledgeable and they have to do their own research and understand what this should look like.
So direct explicit instruction, because I really want to be careful about the science of reading. I think that it almost feels like a trap now. Parents and moms want to know, okay, so my kid doesn't read well. I shared with you. My son, I thought, was a pretty good reader. You know, he could read. I mean, he could pick up a magazine and read it. He could, you know, back of the cereal box. We sat down with the book, The Call of the Wild. Boy, did he struggle. Mm-hmm. It was heavy. He wasn't used to and comfortable with the language and the cadence of the words and the way that they were styled. He struggled. And I took a step back and I was like, wow, my kid really doesn't know how to read as well as I thought he did. Mm-hmm. And so for parents that are looking at their children's instruction, what should they be looking for to know that good quality reading instruction is happening with their child?
Well, most importantly, the foundation needs to be set.
Okay.
And so when you try to build a house on a shaky foundation, you know what will happen. It doesn't matter if you put Anderson windows in. It doesn't matter how fancy you make the house.
Yeah.
If it's built on a poor foundation,
It's coming down.
So most importantly, the basics have to be set. And so that would be, they could form their letters easily. They could recognize their letters easily. They could push sounds together smoothly in the most basic words. They could break it apart and spell words. You know, that's the basics. Then, of course, there's language that should be growing from the time they're born. And that's their vocabulary. And vocabulary is money in the bank. So there's always cumulative interest if, you know, it's growing and growing and growing. If vocabulary is stunted because kids can't lift the words off the page, it becomes a cycle, right? So if it's hard for them to read the words, they're not going to want to read. And if they don't want to read, their vocabulary is not going to grow.
Can we stop on vocabulary, though? I want to talk.
Sure.
So yes, I'm a new mom. I've got babies. What does it look like to from the time they are born to build a vibrant vocabulary with your child? What are you doing? What is your day-to-day interaction like with your child?
Well, there should be interaction. That's the key word right there. So passive listening to a television does not build language. So it's not just hearing language. It has to be this serve and return. And that's a term that has been used in Harvard University, this serve and return, where you ask something, you want an answer back. You try to extend language. So if a child gives you a one-word answer, you take that word and you try to extend it, possibly with some adjectives. And so you could just point to an avocado and say, well, this is an avocado, and it stops there.
Right.
But if you start getting into how the avocado could then be turned into guacamole, and then, you know, you get into what it is and how it grows and, you know, all these different things that you can talk about with your child, that's how you extend language. Unfortunately, what we're seeing now is a lot of passive listening. And so where parents might think, well, you know, I'm putting on something for them that's educational. Yeah, that's better than putting on some, you know, junk, but it's really the interaction of language, extending language, having conversations, and recognizing if that's not happening. So if in fact parents are truly trying to have this interaction and they're seeing there are delays, do not let someone else tell you, oh, well, my kid was like that. And, you know, it, some kids are just late talkers. And yes, some kids are later talkers, but it's certainly a red flag. And, you know, language is a red flag. And I think this is something that is not told to parents during their regular visits to the doctor, that speech and language, late talking, articulation problems, syntax that's off where kids are mixing up how words go together, inflectional endings that are incorrect. You know, at the beginning, it's cute, but there's a point where it should work itself out. And if that is not happening, you definitely need to explore this with a professional. Now, notice I'm not saying a neuropsychologist. Right. I am saying, you know, an SLP should really be looking into that and working with the parent, trying to get more talk, more language, and how to grow that language. So that, very important.
Yeah, and I love that you brought up the avocado. The grocery store and cooking was always a real time of me building vocabulary with the kids. You know, you're in the grocery store and you pick up an orange, you start talking about it. It's bumpy. What does it smell like? You know, so, I think that if we're not doing a good job of telling young moms that they need to be having that interaction, that we as moms with older kids should be talking about it more. It's so important to talk to your child, to talk to your baby all the time about what's happening and what you're doing. And, you know, and I really do believe that you build that vocabulary with your kids when you have that interaction all the time. So I love that you brought that up, because parents really want to know, right? How do I set my kids up for success? So let's say that you've spoken to your child when they've been growing up, you have books at home, you read to them, so they're getting experience with different words and different concepts. They know their alphabet. They know their name. They can write their first name and last name. Let's just say, you know, kids can write their name. They know their alphabet. They're coming into kindergarten. Is that kindergarten ready? What does kindergarten ready look like, or should look like, in America right now?
So I think that, yes, certainly being familiar with most of the letters in the alphabet would set kids up on a good path. There are kids where they cannot remember their letters. And, you know, they use this as an assessment, letter naming fluency, as a benchmark. The issue is that's a predictor of reading. But honestly, what's more important is this association between letters and sounds. And because that's what you need to read. Me giving you the letter names in, you know, a word is not going to get kids to read the word, but understanding the connection, the code of, you know, if the sound is at, oh, if I push that together, it's going to be mat, and making that connection with those letters. And the problem with English is it's not this simple one-to-one correspondence. So some kids could make those early correspondences, but then they have trouble later when you have more than one letter representing a sound, and you have a sound with more than one letter pattern. And if this is not explicitly taught, there's your direct explicit instruction. If that's just assumed that they will pick it up, there could be problems. Notice I don't say there will be problems, because some kids intuitively figure this out. But many kids don't. Many kids are left in the dark. And what do? They're left to then use the pictures, make meaning based on their little six-year-old bodies. And so their meaning is limited, you know, in terms of what they know at that age. So they are trying to put meaning in rather than extract meaning from the page. That's what they're forced to do at that point. So this is when the guessing comes in. And if they're not taught correctly, K to two, and research shows it is very hard to make it up later on. That doesn't mean that kids can't learn to read at an older age. I don't want to leave people feeling like, well, it's too late, we missed the boat. Right. No, I work with plenty of kids and have worked with plenty of older kids. The issue is the best time to intervene is early, because that's when there's gap closing measures. When you wait till they're older, the gap widens and it becomes harder and harder to close the gap, because more is expected of kids at that point.
Thank you for that. So you're a mom, your kids are in school now, you hear, oh, we're South Carolina, other places adopting the science of reading, right? Their teachers are going through something called letters training in South Carolina to try to help them to be able to teach children how to read effectively in the classroom. What are the things you're looking for when you hear the science of reading label? What is it that you want to see in the classroom to know that your kids are actually getting good quality, direct, explicit instruction when it comes to reading?
Well, you want some type of handwriting happening. I see kids forming their letters bottom up. They are just making letters look like the letter sometimes, but they're doing it so inefficiently that it takes them so long to put a letter down. How are they ever going to get the message down? So you have to realize that every little basic piece of this needs to be, you know, a well-oiled machine. It has to be automatic. And it should be where kids are forming their letters correctly, easily, without thought after a while. You want the thinking going into the message they want to write, not about, do I form my letter this way, that way? Oh, how do you spell that word? I don't know how to spell that. And they just put something down phonetically, you know, based on the sounds that they're hearing. Eventually, they should learn conventional spelling. There should be conventional spelling taught.
Is this the difference between a kid writing phone, F-O-N-E or P-H-O-N-E?
Correct. So now at the beginning, that's normal. That's, you know, kids are trying to make associations between the sounds that they hear and then trying to come up with letters that would match. But if they don't learn the code, many of them will just put that down. And what's really sad is as they get older, some of this is not corrected. Teachers were told, you know, I know I was told, don't put any, you know, too many marks on a piece of paper.
I hate that.
You know, it will make them feel bad. No, what's going to make them feel bad is when they can't get a job.
Right.
Because the fact is you are judged by being able to be a literate person. And, you know, if you cannot tell the difference as you get older and you're spelling words like was, W-U-Z, and you're in fourth grade and it's not being corrected, that's a problem,
100%.
You know?
So, Faith, what role has the introduction of computers and technology played in the classroom when it comes to handwriting? Because I have seen, even especially since COVID, I think it just went on hyperspeed. But what effect is that having? What is the importance between the brain connection with the handwriting, and are computers are hurting kids?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a double-edged sword. So Is it hurting? So computers can be very helpful. So I want to start off with that. It can be very helpful. Are they overused? Does it become almost like a babysitter in some cases? Yes, indeed. So I think young children should be taught how to form their letters. I don't think we should be giving up on that so soon. I think I'm seeing a lot of, schools putting kids on programs and giving them a keyboard very early on before they even know how to type.
Yeah, kindergarten, Faith. They have 100% kindergarten in every school district across the United States.
Yes, but they're expected to actually write on the computer, like something like essays at, first grade, second grade, third grade, when they don't know how to use both hands on the keyboard. So what are they doing? They're hunting and pecking with one finger. Do you think that's any faster than teaching them how to hold a pencil correctly, how to write, and putting that extra time and practice into doing this? We're giving up too quickly on those types of things. Kids really should not be writing essays on a computer until they're in at least fifth or sixth grade. And that's after keyboarding is taught, right? They should get some keyboarding instruction. Now, I think that using your hand is extremely helpful in learning what letters look like as well. There's that connection. That's the multisensory component. So if you want to talk about multisensory, some of this is nonsense, like silly things, but writing is, connected to the sounds, connected to what we say. All of that is multisensory learning. And that's what parents should be looking for, that there is true handwriting instruction being taught, that letters are formed correctly, not just look like the letter, not just drawing letters, but that there's handwriting instruction and taught with practice. The code should be taught, the alphabetic code, where kids know that, as they're reading, that there are multiple spellings for sounds and they should be exposed until statistical learning takes over. And once they realize how this code works, often they're self-teaching. They are able to pick up other things. But if they get the wrong message early on and they think reading is just a matter of figuring out the meaning by jumping around, and then parents are being told, your child has some vision issues. Maybe you should see, go for vision therapy and something that's an unproven type of thing. And I'm not saying there isn't a need for vision therapy, but dyslexia is not connected to vision. And, there are a lot of misunderstandings out there. Why are kids jumping all around the page? Well, it could be because they're hunting for meaning, rather than going left to right all through the word, reading line by line the way they should. So Tiffany, I don't know what your son was missing along the way. Obviously, Rigor. You sound like you did a lot of talking with your child, a lot of exposure to books. I don't know if he had any word reading issues that maybe you were unaware of. There could have been a breakdown even in reading multisyllable words. So as the words get bigger.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I'll just share with you and for other moms, it wasn't so much that he was incapable of reading the words. It was that he lacked the grit to be able to engage with the subject matter. It was that every interaction that he was having when he was in public school with any type of text was an excerpt. So he was never reading, full novel. He was never engaging with anything where he was having to pick up a book and read a chapter and then put it down and come back to it and remember what happened. And just the language was more complicated than, it's like the first time you read Shakespeare, right? And you're like, oh, wow, this is really different than just picking up, a book by Mark Twain or something, right? It's different. And so I think that was it. He really lacked the grit to be able to like dig into something new that he hadn't been exposed to, that was different subject matter, and just felt very much like it was just too much for him.
So
go ahead.
That to me What you said about just excerpts, right, and not really reading a whole book, that is a problem. You know, one thing I could say when I did start my teaching career, we did have what was called great books in school. And we had junior great books where every kid got a whole book in their hands. And we sat in a circle in this fishbowl format, and there was this Socratic method of asking questions and teaching kids to ask questions about what they were reading and reading it together on something that was high level, like digging in with the teacher at a high level. And, you know, a lot of that went out the window with leveled books, where kids were reading on their levels. And so then how are they growing? If they stay stuck in a level, we're leveling their lives, right? We're giving them leveled lives rather than presenting something that is challenging, teaching them how to strategically get through it, talking about the language, going through it with them, teaching them to ask good questions, modeling good questioning techniques as I'm reading. This, I find, is definitely missing in Tier 1 instruction. Tier 1 is what every kid gets in the classroom, not being pulled out for intervention. So it doesn't sound like your child had serious issues. It sounds like he was stunted because that, you know, he wasn't going deeply enough into books. So there's all sorts of reading problems on a scale of 1 to 10. Probably if your son was given different books with different instruction, he probably could fly, yeah, I mean, I would imagine.
The Diary of a Wimpy Kid is different than Call of the Wild. Like, right. For parents, if you're listening to this, yeah, it's great that your kids read independently. And I want kids to enjoy reading and they should read subject matter. You know, Matt Christopher books about sports and stuff. There, you know, there are great books out there and pleasure reading is important. But I do think really pushing your kids and elevating what they're engaging with in a book is important, right? So is there a place, 100%. Yeah, is there a place for Diary of a Wimpy Kid? Yes, 100%. That's fun. It's just like a beach read for for you as an adult. But are there better, higher quality books that are really going to stimulate you? There are. And so, you know, that's one of the goals with our moms is to really try to say, okay, what, you know, what can we do at home? So I really want to close out with you on that. So we've talked about the way reading used to be taught and some questions and red flags to look for if that's still happening. We're working on an academic toolkit, Faith, at Moms for Liberty for parents to better engage with their school system, questions that they can ask to help them to understand how is my child being taught? Is it working for my child? And maybe what could we be doing differently? And so we're working on that right now. That should be out soon. And I'm really excited about it. We're going to include your books as a resource Thank for you. Parents to be able to go and to learn. And we'll cover that again before we close out today. And so now we've covered also what should instruction look like in the classroom? What are some good things that you're seeing, right? Having your child help you wrote out your grocery list. Something as simple as that can be really helpful in knowing and watching your child and how they're writing to see how are they forming letters? Things of that nature are important. So again, it's that interaction with your child in you know, interesting ways to really try to do a check with them on how they're doing. And I, as I have shared, I gave my child a book that was a reach for him. It was a reach book, but it was something that he should have been able to read. And it really revealed a lot to me as a mom, and I was able to help him. And you've talked about even in early development, you know, building the vocabulary and having that interaction with your child. One of the things you started off with that you said, I think is really important. I heard from another friend of mine, Marilyn Muller, who is a mom that I know we both know. She's an incredible literacy advocate. Her daughter has dyslexia, and she felt that guilt. Her daughter was in school for a number of years and wasn't doing well. And you mentioned it earlier. Marilyn had mentioned it to me. She's done a podcast with me before. If you have a little kid who doesn't want to go to school in the morning and gets in the car and is acting out and upset or unhappy, that is not natural. For K, one, two, the kids should like going to school and being with their friends. It should be, you know, I understand people say, oh, no, kids like school. No, kids really do love being with their friends and that interaction. So Faith, big red flag. My kid is really showing a lot of reticence when it comes to going to school or seems very unhappy at the end of the day. What's your best advice to parents on how to begin to engage with their school district to do some problem solving?
Yes. So, you know, if the nurse is calling you up often, that's a red flag. All right. You know, when kids are running to the nurse all the time, going to the bathroom a lot, that's an escape route, basically. You know, they are experiencing high stress. And just imagine being in an environment where, you know, you're hearing this language, it's going over your head, you see other kids picking it up, you're not picking it up. It's extremely stressful. Yeah. So parents need to be in tune with what's going on. Again, if the teacher is saying, just wait, give it time, they're still in these leveled books and they're stuck in leveled books, that's a problem. If they're not advancing, they shouldn't even be in those low-level books. They should be given books that match the code that's being taught to give them enough practice. Obviously, still being exposed to great books and talking with parents and teachers about books, but books that they're expected to read in K and one when they're just learning how should match what they're being taught. They shouldn't just be given books with this predictable, repetitive language. So how does a parent go to a school and say, I'm concerned? You have to be knowledgeable before you walk in.
Okay.
So don't just go in because the teacher might not know herself or himself any more than what you know, unfortunately. They might really feel that, oh, just give it time. Or, you know what, maybe he has some problems with friends, or, you know, they're going to tell you what they think. You have to go in armed with information and say, you know what, this is what I know about how kids are learning to read, right? So hopefully if they do read, if only I would have known, they would get a nice foundation in that. And then my other books that I have really talk about elementary school, what it should look like. But if you go in knowing, well, I should see letters and sounds being taught. I should see handwriting. I should see word work. I should see some what's called engaging reading discussions, something like that. If you only see leveled book groups, like my kid is stuck in the lowest group, you need to go there and say, this is not working because my kid is going to be stuck in a leveled group and I won't accept that. So how are we going to work together to change this? And often the teacher is, their hands are tied. It's going to have to go higher. You're going to have to start going to community school board meetings, armed with information, not being angry, but being assertive, knowing what it is you want, what you should see, and what you know should be happening. And this is why there is even a science of reading. That started with parents. That started with parents like Marilyn. You know, these dyslexia mom groups. That's why there is this change. It wasn't really happening. It didn't start at the universities, that I can tell you.
And I want to talk about it, and we'll close with that. And then I'd like for you to share your information about your website and books. But I'm going to say this. Moms and dads across America are concerned about our children. We are concerned about the instruction that they are getting in school and whether that instruction is really going to help them to unfold their full potential in life. We are not going to stop talking about reading and literacy. We are going to learn everything that we need to so that we can be the best advocate for our child. So anyone who thinks that this can become a partisan issue or a political issue, or parents will somehow be shamed out of advocating for their child or calling out nonsense when they see it. We will be effective advocates. As Faith says, we will not be angry. We will be joyful in our advocacy, but we will pull these school districts out of the dark ages, kicking and screaming if we have to, because kids in America deserve to learn to read. And you can call me all the names in the book, but none of it will stop me for advocating for my child or other children. So with that, Faith, highfiveliteracy.com is your website, right?
Yes, that's my website for people who want to find out more about me.
Okay.
Then I have ifonlybooks.com, and that's all about the If Only books, If Only I Would Have Known books. And there, I have free resources on there. And there's one that I think would be very interesting called Can You See Me? And it can be for parents who want to take this to a district meeting and have a talk around that. It's absolutely free. I don't even ask for your email because I really want you to use it. And sometimes people don't want to give their email. Sure. So it's truly a free, it's not just me getting your email. That's not what it's about.
Nothing about you makes me think that you are a grifter, Faith Borkowski. I think that you come at this with very pure intentions. And I really appreciate you taking the time to speak to me today about the importance of learning to read and about how parents can be better advocates for their kids. So pick up Faith's book. She has Failing Students or Failing Schools. And just a quick intro, if you listen to this podcast, this book, it says, is reading a struggle for your child? Does it cause your child stress or embarrassment? Are you confused by the mixed messages you receive from teachers and other professionals? Then this book is for you. And then there's the If Only I Would Have Known series of books. And that's in Spanish as well. Translated. And that's really, really important. So if you're a Moms for Liberty chapter, having this book, making this resource accessible to your community, especially the Hispanic community, where there are not a lot of resources right now in education for Hispanic parents, Spanish-speaking parents. And we know there are many more Spanish-speaking parents and kids that are entering our school system who not only don't know how to read, but now have to learn English and then learn how to read. And that presents, that would be a whole nother podcast, I would imagine, Faith, to talk about
100%.
That, right?
I just want to say one more thing. Yes. I also have a podcast.
Okay.
I co-host a podcast called The Literacy View.
Okay.
And I'm proud of it because it is inclusive and it is welcoming. And we do welcome Moms for Liberty to listen, because I do think this has become such a polarized issue. And reading is for everyone.
That's right.
And some people probably would have warned me, don't go on this podcast because, it's going to ruin your career. I'm sure I'm going to get that. So, and I told you before, I will talk to anyone if it comes to helping a child to read and sticking to what I know is right.
Yep.
And I respect you, Tiffany, that we did stick to literacy in this conversation.
Of course.
And I would love to continue this conversation with you and your members, and I would be happy to speak at one of your functions.
I would love that.
I'm not going to let that scare me off.
Good. So. Thank you. We need that. We need brave people that are going to fight for kids. And really, our children inherit the future that we create for them. And the onus is on all of us as adults to create a bright future for them. Thomas Paine said, if there must be trouble, let it come in my day so that my children may live in peace. And I think we've been given a credible opportunity, Faith, to see behind the education curtain when it came to COVID. Parents are more engaged and energized about their kids' educations than they ever have been before. And so just really an honor to meet you, to have you on the podcast. We're going to give your resources, list your resources on our website. When the academic toolkit comes out, we'll make sure to include some of your resources there as well for people to have links to be able to get to. And I just thank you for loving kids enough to fight as hard as you do to help them to be the most they
can
be.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Of course.